with assistance, or it will create more problems in going forward. Because currently, Madam Chair, you won't expect that come January we have a student who is ultimately not owing the institution at all. And not taking into consideration that each and every institution continue, Madam Chair, to increase fees without taking into consideration the funding that is available. Maybe we must start discussing, Madam Chair, whether giving the universities a certain amount of budget to look to decide on whether how they spend that money, Madam Chair. It's another discussion on the phone. But Madam Chair, we must look at that issue, Madam Chair. First, the historical debt, it must be retained, Madam Chair. Either way, we may claim it another way, but student debt must be paid, Madam Chair. And the civil
I thought you were speaking on behalf of the Deputy President. Do you have any additions, Deputy President? Because I take it that this is the presentation of the collective. Okay. All right. No, that's fine. Well, the time has come now for the department to give us a presentation on the policy. What we are more interested in is you giving us the policy and whether the university is implementing the policy to the latter, and where there are gaps, we look at how can we plug into those gaps so that at the end of the day we achieve the objective of the policy. Right, over to you, Seth, but let me also consult with you. Should it be you or NESPA first? I was just thinking to myself, because maybe when you respond, you can also respond to NESPA, because the policy should also be talking to NESPA and all this. Okay. With your permission, can we now change? Are you okay? Should we start with NESPA?
Sorry, ma'am. I can start because I'm covering more than NESPA, and then NESPA can come in.
Okay. That's fine. All right. Over to you, sir. Must not forget the tea served for you, specially prepared for you, for all of you. So please do help yourself. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Yes. Thank you, ma'am, for the opportunity. I just want to pick up on a few issues on the presentation, and also maybe one or two on the response by the president of the SRC. Mainly this would be the responses in a way, but also expanding on some of the matters that the Vice Chancellor presented. First of all, on the realignment of financial years between the national fiscus and the universities, this is what is affecting universities all over. But let me just go back a little bit, ma'am. I think, you know, the honorable members, as they were listening to this presentation, because we have been together in the past presentations from the Mamosuthu University of Technology, University of Limpopo, then HISA. I think you can pick up that this presentation was supposed to have come before HISA. Because now when HISA presented, I think that was last week, they covered everybody. And my understanding is that Forte was going to be presenting before that, but there was postponement. I think it can show in the presentation that some of the issues have already been covered in the previous presentation. The alignment of the national fiscal financial year and that of the institutions is something that had been discussed before with the National Treasury. And at the moment, there's no resolution on that matter, because the institutions start to get their funding from April, and that is the beginning of the financial year on the national fiscal, our financial year as government. But the financial year of the institution had started to operate in January and accepting students in February, and without receiving funds from government, from the department, because we received the money from National Treasury from April. So it's not a decision of the department, but it's a national department. It's a national issue beyond just the department. It has been raised with the National Treasury, and so far there has been no resolution on it. On the payment of that by the universities, all of them, again, we raised this matter with the Auditor General and also the National Treasury. The matter, well, as far as we understand, when we raised it, they said they will take it up because that would also include SARS. So far, that we raised it earlier this year, I think it was in June when we met with the National Treasury and AG together in the same room. And so far we haven't had a response. But of course this was with the official, so probably in their respective departments or government departments, they would still take it up with their principals. On the matter of department refusing the institution to build on the prefabrication, I would call it, and then rather use bricks and mortar. Yes, that refusal was because we had already looked at a sample that was presented by Stellenbosch University, and we were not happy with the product. As much as there are guarantees from the people that produce that, but we prefer that we still have bricks and mortar at the institution. When they build lasting structures. So it's not just targeted at Forte, but generally to the system. But those institutions that had embarked on prefabrication, for instance, those would be institutions that had used their resources and not those from the department. And then turning on to the four-year degrees, there was a study that was commissioned by the department to the Council on Higher Education to study the implications of extending the three-year to four-year degrees in the country. And that task team and the CHE reported last year, late last year, to the department with the recommendations. What is still being done at the moment, therefore, is to rework it to have a policy proposal presented to the system, to the whole of the higher education system, with the purpose of implementing what we then agree upon within the system. And of course it's implications because it's got financial implications for everybody, not just for the students who would be paying fees, but also for the institutions if, for instance, there's an extension of the 3 year to 4 year degree. But also it got implications on the honors because in countries where there are no honors level, there are 4 year degrees, and the fourth year covers what would have been honors on our side. So it's got some domino effect of some kind. So there has to be a careful discussion and a careful agreement, not only also just the higher education system, but again national teachers, because the subsidy that goes to those degrees is the money that we've got that we get from the national fiscal. The throughput rate as presented in the slide, unfortunately I just can't go to the slides at the moment, but I'll try and be as clear as possible on some of the issues that respond directly to the slides. On the throughput rate, yes, there are improvements as shown by the presentation from the Vice Chancellor. But I think we need to take it broader, and again, I think this was the issue that had already been raised in the previous presentation. There are improvements in terms of the graduation rate, but there are problems when it comes to the throughput rate. They are actually dropping. And this, the example that we made was previously was the study that the cohort studies that the department is doing, where we look at those that enter the system and how long it takes for them to get out of it with the qualification. And what we have seen, the example again I will make is that 40% of the students that enter the system drop out in the very first same year, the very first year that they entered. And then by the time it goes to graduation, it's only about 20-something%, about 25%. Who are graduating. So the problem again there is just broader than the department or our higher education system. It also relates to the issues of poverty. It relates to our schooling system. And therefore, when we find solutions on these matters, particularly on that of retention of students in the system, we need to be looking broader than just our system, our higher education system. Schooling is one of them. Poverty is one of them. And families cannot afford not just poverty. You know, it's also affording being able to afford fees for the university. As I said, you know, this matter. You know, we had raised it in the previous presentation. And then on research development grants dropping, and I think the word that was used during this was this perverse incentive to the institutions that they are performing well, and then their incentives are dropping. The two things that happened with the research development grants in 2011, the formula that we were using, when I started in the department about more than 8 years ago, the research development grant was about 280 million rand for all the 23 universities. The institutions performed and performed well. And as the institutions performed, the research development grants dropped because of the formula that was there in the system. It dropped from 280 to 6 million rand. And that 6 million rand was available for all 23 universities at the time. And that was around 2011. That meant that the institutions that were benefiting on research development grants would not benefit. So we then worked against the formula and stabilize and cut out dog slides, if that's the right word, dog slides the research funding or the research fund, so that we can have amount for research development grant. So now we've done that and it keeps growing a little bit. We were at 187 million rand and so it's going to be growing to maybe, let's say, to about 300 million rand at some point. And that money favors the institutions that are, well, starting with historically disadvantaged institutions, but the institutions that are not performing well on research. So they are the highest beneficiary of that amount at the moment. Now, well, the other thing I wanted to, when I was reading the slides, VC, I couldn't guess whether the additional funding we gave to Forte was reflected on the research development grant, because we awarded them additional funds over and above what we had awarded Forte in 2014. So there was additional few millions of rands as well for research development. Yes, it's very useful, and I think FORTE is one of those institutions that can show how useful a research development grant is. And that is seen in their performance, in their research performance. Now, I'm going to disappoint you, Vice Chancellor, on the research publications output. We are working on that, and the numbers that you reflected, I think it's 249 that you have claimed for 2013, and the information that I got very late is that it's 230.34. So there is some about 19 units that were not approved of the institution. But if you're looking at it, yes, very good, still very good, because it's still an improvement from 208 units of 2012. So there's still growth when it comes to research research output from the institution. That is just the publications, but of course, the research output at the institution, they include research masters, graduates, and they include PhD graduates. And from the presentation by the VC is that there's still going to be a graduation in October, so there will still be, certainly there will still be improvements. That is guaranteed. I will leave the matters of NSFAS to NSFAS colleagues who are here. But let me just say one thing on NSFAS. NSFAS does not fund postgraduates. That one is clear. NSFAS don't fund post-cert qualification. So that is why NSFAS is not funding BTEC, because BTEC is an additional qualification from a diploma. But with regard to BTEC, NSFAS does fund professional BTECs. If you're doing engineering, for instance, then going to be registered as a professional engineer after you qualify and you need the BTEC, you cannot register as a professional with the diploma. You need BTEC, therefore NSFAS does fund those a few of those professional degrees BTEC. Otherwise, NSFAS does not fund a second qualification. If NSFAS were to fund a second qualification, there would even be fewer numbers of students that benefit from NSFAS. Mm. And again, you know, I just want to say this, Madam Chair, from the side of the department. And again, you know, I'm not here for the negotiation between the management of FORTE and the student leadership. But there's one thing that, that we had said previously, and I can't remember which presentation was this. And I don't know how the management of FORTE manages this one. The normalization of fees, it's something that's going to be very difficult and tricky, unless the cross-subsidization. If you live in Alice, you're paying less rates than in East London. So the fees that the university charges, resident fees, or even the fees, tuition fees, they cannot be the same, because they are paying more more money in East London than in Alice, and that's how things are. Alice is a rural town. With services that are far less than those services that you get in East London. And therefore, it would be unfair, unless, of course, the university is able to do that, but it's unfair to think that if you are in East London, you'll be paying the same amount as in Alice. It's unfair to those students in Alice to be expected to pay the same rates as they are paid in East London. I think there just has to be an understanding to this, and this is what most of the time when I meet with the student leadership, we cannot continue in the same way as we did in the past. The student leadership has got access now to information and to resources, and they can make use of their fellow colleagues who are doing accounting, for instance, and work out some of these things. So it's no longer just demand as it used to be in the past, but it should be a demand with information, well-informed information. And probably, you know, I'm raising this name because, as I said, you know, because maybe from, if the students are hearing it from the side of the department, our expectation as the department would be that there is fairness on what is happening in East London, and there's fairness against what is happening in Alice, you know, and this goes across many institutions that are spread like that, those that have a foot in the rural areas and a foot in the urban settings. And yes, as a final issue, yes, the funding, even though we're still using the current funding system, which I would call the old funding framework, we're still working on the new one. Even though we're still using this current one, we are favoring the historically disadvantaged institutions in the allocation of funding. The infrastructure, for instance, the infrastructure grants favor more the historically disadvantaged institutions than the historically advantaged, and not. It's not former advantage institutions or former disadvantaged institutions. We're using the term historically disadvantaged deliberately because some of those disadvantages continue presently. The issue, for instance, that the Vice Chancellor made example of that the HDIs do not have reserves is a historical matter. It's not the issue that just arose out of the current funding formula. It's a historical issue in the sense that those institutions were not allowed by law under apartheid, were not allowed to accumulate reserves against the historically advantaged institutions that were allowed to accumulate reserves during apartheid. Now, that's a whole lot of history to recover and a whole lot of time to catch up with. So in the past 20 years, they couldn't have accumulated reserves in the same way in the same period of time that they were not allowed to accumulate those reserves. And inflation has even gone higher than in the past. So that is what is happening. Even in the new formula, even though we don't have a draft yet of the new formula, funding formula, but there's one thing we have already decided on as the department, is that we will favor the historically disadvantaged institutions. So if we are not just applying this now as a short measure currently, but it goes beyond the current period to even in future, we will favor the historically disadvantaged institutions in the allocation of funding. But that is up to a point as well. I think we should understand that. It's to a point that, for instance, the institution can be able to utilize the funds. If, for instance, they want to expand, do they have the land to expand on and build more facilities? Do they have enough capacity? If, for instance, they're increasing student residences, would they be occupied and all those kind of things? So it's not a blind application of a principle or favoring historically disadvantaged institutions is calculated. It's favoring them on a calculated system. And those are the issues, ma'am, that I could pick up that I thought, you know, they deserve our response. And I didn't go far on the NSFAS because the NSFAS colleagues are here. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you for the presentation, and if you may just elaborate on the, I think it's a decline in funding for research. I think after you've achieved a certain, did you respond to that?
I can even go further, man, on that.
Please go further.
Yes, it's my area.
Professor Hebe, you know, was really concerned that you said, but how do we maintain if you're going to then stop funding?
Yes.
All right.
You see, I responded on the research development grant, and I can respond now broader on the funding for research. And I think I'll be expanding on what I said before. The research funds, the research pot the research pot of funds in the department is in excess of 2 billion rand. And that 2 billion rand, 60% of it, or close to 60%, about 59% or so, it goes to six institutions, because they are very strong on research. 60% of about 2.2 billion rand goes to six institutions. Then the rest of the institutions have to then deal with the 40%. I can actually even break it down further. About 33% of that amount goes to the next eight institutions, and then the rest of that money, about 10% or so, goes to about 11 universities. Those are mainly all the universities of technology are in that 11, and all the historically disadvantaged institutions led by Forte are in that 11 institutions. Now, then what then happens is that in that pot of funds, that 2.2 billion rand, the more the institutions are producing their research output, and the research output here would be publications and the research masters and PhDs, the more they produce, as you could see with Forte, the less that pot of funds is able to sustain all of them, or is able to give to all of them. The units, for instance, that we refer to, the rand value of a unit has grown from about 85,000 rand to a peak of about 127,000 rand. Now, because the institutions are performing well and they are producing more research, the value of that unit, just like rand dollar value, the value of that unit has gone down to about from 127,000 rand to 117,000 rand. I don't know for 2013 how much it will be, but by the look of things, that there was good performance again by the institution. So the rand value may drop. The rand value will be sustained to a higher level or grow if the national treasury or the national fiscal is putting more money to the new money, as it were, to the pot of funds that we have, to the subsidy that we give to the institutions. That's the only way that we will be able to grow it. Now, the sad news is that it's going to go down even further, because we are expanding the recognition of the publications output. We are expanding it in the sense that up to now, we are using two international indices. Now, in future, we're going to be using four international indices. The international index we're using now is ISI, is a US-based, and also IBFS, which is UK-based. We're going to be adding on that Scopus, which is based in the Netherlands, and also the Norwegian index that they are using. Adding those means that we're adding more journals for recognition and more conference proceedings for recognition. So therefore, the academics who are publishing in the journals that were not recognized in the past, but are going to be recognized now, means therefore that we will have more performance shown by the system, and therefore less money available for all of the system. So the rent value is going to drop. The rent value of the unit is going to be dropping. I hope I tried to explain this one as clear as possible. But that is the reason why I'm off the top. And we may be continuing with the formula that we are using. It's incentive basis. It's on an incentive basis. And then the development part of it is taken care of by the research development. We think that it's good to have it performance-based. The more the institutions perform, the more money they attract to them. That is an incentive. But also, the component of research development takes care of those institutions that are unable to compete at the same level as the others.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. We will now proceed to NFA.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll just come in and just clarify a few issues from the side of NFA. The biggest challenge in the system, and I think Mr. Mabuza from the government alluded to, is about the availability of funding. So there is not enough funding that goes around for all the students that would have wanted to be assisted. And from Dr. calls all students that are in need of financial aid, we call them NSFAP students. We call them financial needy students because the NSFAP students are students that are funded by NSFAP. We call them financial needy students. The financial needy students are students that can't be funded by NSFAP because NSFAP only has performance. Part of the challenge, Chair, is about the inflation rate of higher education. That's one of the challenges. Higher education students in general areas, three increases that increase from range from 10% upwards. And our MCS allocation in the budget increases by about 5 to 6%. Then from there you already have significant number of students because the inflation rate and the money that comes from the fiscal are not aligned. And that's something that when you speak with this they will say this is the reality, books are increasing at 10% or 12%. Especially the other part of the fiscal is increasing at about 5 to 6%, which is in line with the national federal projection of inflation. And the academic alignment is something that also has been addressed. But on the side of the network, what we do is to try and make money available from January to March through the money that comes from former students to the collection. We make that money available to universities on the sort of investors request funding, and Patel has also benefited from that funding this year, so that they can be able to assist the needs of students in the system throughout that period of no money in the system, which is from January up to about March, when before the new financial year starts, but after the old academic year ended. The issue raised by the SRC on confirmation of funding. The major funding category, which is money that comes from the DHET and the NSF, is confirmed to the universities by the Director General in and around between the 15th and the 20th of December, before the start of the financial year. The DG writes to the universities on the road for this year on the 19th of December to all the districts saying, this is the money that you have for this year. Of course, that money will start flowing in from March, because when you tell me when then that the fiscal gap can open, but money is confirmed by the DGCs by around December. Then NSF, I write to the DGCs in and around the 6th of January to confirm this is the money that you get from the National Skills Fund. And then there's various other funders that you manage, and unfortunately, it's not all of them that confirm money early enough. And we're engaging with them, including the development of education in terms of how soon can we confirm the student that will be funded under the funder of the Shadow program. Now, the third thing is part of the broader challenge. We can take policy decisions inside the system as to what is going to fund or not going to fund. But we're sitting with this ceiling. The ceiling is the amount of money that is available in the system. And we can shift it, within the system, but it means that you take it from another field to another field. And that's just part of the challenges that the city are inside the system. The issue of the 64,000 grand ceiling is also related to that. And it's interesting that it's coming from students at the University of Cape Town. I thought students at the University of Cape Town would be the one that raised the issue of the ceiling. Because if we can open up this floodgate of the ceiling, students at the city can go up to 120,000 grand again. And therefore, the students that will end up at the bottom end of this letter will actually be students from 40 if we open up this ceiling funding. And, we'd rather keep the ceiling funding. Fortunately for these universities that are charging higher fees than others, they're able to subsidize the students from 64 to 120,000. And, they are happy with that system that let's not pay 64,000 and they change it from 64,000 up to whatever those students are. And whether the ceiling is right at 64 or it's a venue, but I believe, I certainly believe that the ceiling should still be kept
it protects the investors that are more dangerous in terms of financial aid than those that are actually well off. It's designed to protect those investors, and that's whether 54 or 60 or 70 is the right number, that's subject to discussion. And then there's not an impact of throughput on financial aid, because if students stay longer in the system, that means we have to fund them more in the system. And that's why we commit to fund the students for N plus 2, which is the normal number of years plus an additional 2 years. And there's more students staying in the system, therefore it means that we have to spend a bit more. Both grant funding has been addressed. There's no money in the system for both grant funding. But, you know, sometime last year, it was the end of last year, we were favored by the National Skills Fund with an additional amount of money. And we went to the universities and asked them their pressure, the funding pressure, as well as the funding pressure. A lot of the universities that need to assist or focus for both sides of funding, their funding pressure at that point. And unfortunately, this is how the system works. The families who do it, they don't get money. You know, and their needs in the system are current. We have to make choices. We keep that money in the bank account and say, we want to smooth it so that the interest is, or to go and intervene with the funding pressure that exists today in the system. And the funding pressure that exists in the system, and we have to intervene in the money that we got from the NSF. And that was one of the funds we knew when the day we got it in the condition from the NSF that you want to get in this one off. You either take it or you don't. And we said, we're going to take it. And we took it. Part of the efficiency in the system, we're doing a lot of things to try and improve efficiency, and we're testing a lot of things through the transformation project in terms of the efficiency plan, you know, the online application form, online signing of loan agreement forms by students, and that's going to help going forward when they start rolling out in terms of the efficiency in the system. And it will also be assist when we roll out the project and project, because we will not have now students queuing for whatever the number of things. Because each student can apply independently and they can also sign their applicant forms independently. So the same confidence is already the same. So what could be done? Of course, there's plenty of implementation, there are some issues that we see. But I think that we think that going forward, this is what is going to solve some of the administrative issues. And then the decrease in the number of students funded, and I think the DC has spoken about this, is also related to the issue of amount of money that came in 2013. So that money was only for 2013. And therefore, we now cycle the normal strategy. Now 2013 was more money came from the NSF, and now we are now cycle the normal strategy in terms of money. Of course, that strategy is affected by increases in fees from various universities and colleges under pressure. And even then, it was not enough to cover for all the students. That's one of the applications. And historic debt, we intervened with historic debt. We assisted a couple of students that could not register. But again, historic debt came from lack of money. It came from money that we got from the National Skills Fund. I think they talked about the math talked about 1 billion rand, and this is the math talked about 1 billion rand that enabled us to assist some of the funding pressures that existed in the system at that point. But there is a normal challenge so that everyone can see over the MTF here that this is the amount of money that's available in the system, and that's the normal challenge of the system, and that's what we need to plan for. Thanks.
That was a presentation from NSF. I'm now going to open for a discussion, but then I want us to start with the first presentation. Focus on the first presentation, finish and then move on to the education presentation and then NSF. But I'm also open for guide by your good self. Which approach do you think would be the best? I've made a proposal, but subject to the one that you know the mostly preferred method of work. Mr. Tikana, still discussing on the approach.
no child support to approach the pre-certification, but in those instances where there's an overlap between issues that are there, I mean, if I want to ask about an issue that is in the first presentation, but it at the same time affect the second and the third, I think I can combine the frame as a question, as a concurrent question.
Okay. I think we are agreeing on the approach, agreed? When you are quiet, I'm not able to, you know, work out whether we are moving from the same wavelength. Yes, Mr. Kassim?
Sure,
on the approach. We are on the approach.
Yes, why only confine ourselves to the first? I think many of these ways, particularly on the responses, because if we ignore some of those responses, we will not be able to have a meaningful discussion. I don't think so. So I would like us to continue on how we've approached in the past and discuss the many of the issues from all of the presentations, and we can then take responses and hopefully our time for taken back.
Okay. So there was a presentation, an elaborate one, by professor, and then the Department of Education, and then myself. Shall we then open the meeting for a discussion? I'll start with Mr. Kassim, and then Ms. Killian, and then Mr. Suela, Professor Pozzoli, Ms. Gadime, and Ms. Tambata, and Ms. Mkuni, in that order. And then shall we then agree on the time? Please, can I make sure that when you come in, let's not have a preface. Let's go straight to the issues, you know, so that we can then be able to manage our time. I know that after this, honourable members know that we have a session sitting, so we must also go and prepare for that session. Thank you very much. Mr. Kassim?
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to be as succinct as possible. I just, turning down the issues itself very quickly before I go to specific questions around the presentation, particularly the first presentation, but I just want to draw down the issue because from the department side, it's quite correct, we've dealt with many of these similar issues before. With MUG, for example, or the University of Limpopo, and we had these discussions last week with ISA. And, I mean, the same responses that we have now from NASA, in fact, is the same responses that we have got from MUG this week. It's not anything new that we are learning in these responses. But, Chair, we've discussed this before at the Portfolio Committee. We know what the issues are in terms of funding. Or rather, should I say, the lack of funding that is available, and the department has told us that treasury is not going to be giving anything additional. I think that is what we need to be focusing now on as a portfolio committee. Because I think when we continue, we're going to keep, you know, bringing in stakeholders and identifying the very same issues, but we won't have found any way forward on how we're going to solve these things holistically. And I want to identify something very quickly, Chairperson. Firstly, on the question of because these are all interlinked. There were the questions of, for example, students that are dropping out in the first year, students that are affected by poverty, students that are not getting funded immediately. It's now the time for us to act. So I want to make a few proposals to your person. Firstly, we had discussed previously on the students who the universities are not getting the funding at the beginning of the year. And if you remember, Chairperson, I'm sure it will be reflected in what we've discussed previously, is that we are to have a discussion on appropriations on how are we able to appropriate money for the department earlier on before the financial year starts, so that we can have funds going to institutions earlier. Because it impacts on everything, Chairperson. When the students are not able to receive book or meal allowances, they are failing their exams. In the first semester, it impacts on whether they meet the N+2 rules or the 50%+1 rules, and they can drop off the system immediately in that regard. With regards to the funding itself, we're not going to solve this issue if we are going to have a discussion of historical debt versus more students. It's very clear we're setting up the system to fail.
And it's going to fail because it's become chaos at the end of the day. We are creating students with debt because we do not have the funding in the first place. Now, if we don't fix this problem now and really use whatever influences we have at the portfolio committee to intervene immediately, it's going to become a bigger problem as we go forward. So we need to now realize and understand that additional funding is a must, and we need to do everything we can to make that possible within our own capacity, chairperson. And we must identify, number one, fixing up the problems that have been created. Who are the students that have historical debts that have been created in this session? How much is that per institution across the country? How do we need to tackle that so that we can have a fresh start? And how do we make sure we prevent that from happening again? Because the way I understand it is that students, because they are desperate to study, they are now studying and creating debt, and now we want to try and knock that debt down the road. But there is no plan in place on how we're really going to solve that at the end of the day, because those students are going to have a debt. Then we're going to look for an injection here and an injection there, and it's not going to solve the problem at the end of the day. It needs to be done immediately. I would love to say we need to give for their additional money to assist the students, but now they're going to say there's no money available. Same thing with MUT, same thing with other institutions. It's not going to solve the problem. Here we need to use our time, I think, at the portfolio committee more efficiently with bringing down to this issue. Going into the fee increases, and it ties into this. Lisa came and presented and said, well, we have to increase fees because the amount of money that is, in terms of the grants to institutions, have been decreasing in real terms. Now, for us to cope with increased numbers and targets, we have to increase fees. That has a knock-on impact on NSFAS, because now NSFAS can't cover that fee increase because it's obviously much higher than the NTF increase. It's all connected here. So the system entirely needs to be looked at as to what, if we want to sustain what we have planned, what is needed for that to happen. And if we want it to happen, it must be funded. And we must fund it from, for example, the grants that are given to institutions so that they do not have to increase fees. And then we can start holding institutions accountable for fee increases, because it differs across the institutions. Then in terms of the NSFAS budget and how we fund, we need to look at the policy aspect. Because I understand when NSFAS will say, well, we can't fund postgraduate students because we don't have the money. But I think as a policy of government or as parliament, when we are here to legislate and create policy, we cannot in good conscience say that our poor students must not be funded for postgraduate studies or their honours or their BTEC, that is a barrier to those studies. Or that BTEC students, for example, that want to go and study further must not be funded. Or that these students that are unfunded now must now compete with new batches next year. I don't think in good conscience any of us here would do that. So we need to look at fixing that problem now already, so we're not dealing with it for the next 5 years. In terms of the residences, Chair, now, the issue is with the infrastructure and the infrastructure.
This will be your last one, because we must give the others a chance as well.
Chair, you just then, I'll ask one or two very quick questions. This is my last point, but one or two very quick questions. On the infrastructure grant, we had discussed this previously, particularly with your institutions that do not have reserves, and how do we exempt certain institutions from their allocation when it is matched by government allocation. I just want that to be kept in mind, because that was something that we wanted, that needed to be followed up, and how are we following up on that. And the last question that I want to know from the institution itself, the 64,000 rand, and it really baffles me that, you know, we are going to exceed that at an institution like Portier. And I think it links also to residence increases as well. But I want a breakdown, please, because it's a very good presentation and we've got a lot of information, but that is the information I'm predominantly looking for. How is that 64,000 rand broken down on average? How much is tuition fees, meals, and if you can even be alienated before your final year students and your other students, etc., residence, books, and all of those things? How do we get to that? Because other institutions, even NMMU, for example, which charges, I think, more in fees, are able to top price and still give students tuition fees and accommodate them in residences and book allowances, etc. Because that really doesn't make sense to me. And the last one is that 2,093 students, how many are continuing students and how many are new applications? I have others share, but I hope the others will cover me.
Of course, people must share. No, in this time we've got limited time, so let's share the limited time. Next.
Thank you.
Just to correct, we're still addressing the presentation by the professor. Because we have been...
By the management of the
institution.
Can I quickly just request, and the, if I look at the slide, which follows on the short history, my concern there is obviously we had a very steep incline in the number of unfunded students. Can you perhaps just explain from last year what was the position, and were you just anticipating, notwithstanding the fact that the department had an unusual sort of clearing of the slate in the past, what were you expecting, and do you have a position that actually differentiates between good performing students that are very deserved cases that you could in fact approach some other business to help them with a bursary or a loan? Do you have any such differentiation of the student? Secondly, it is a problem. It seems that Netfund did not deny that 57.9% of the allocation was paid out today. So there seems to be a problem there. But if you then go look at student protest, the next slide, I wanted to ask the question if there was a specific trend developing. Is it at the beginning of the year? Is it usually at exam period? When do you have the protest action? You have indicated that it varies in sort of, there was a varying degree to damage to property, etc., etc., but is it a particular trend that you can follow up? And I'm concerned about the breakdown in the relationship. What effort is made from the side of management to ensure that there is a continuous flow of communication? Then also to the university's management, you've indicated that one of the issues was books, which would benefit from the National Digital Library that the department supported and has been discussing some time, and last time with the data presentation, we were concerned that we heard that there was no funding available for it, which is going to eventually result in a huge saving for our country if there is such a national digital library. That I'm sure you can also benefit from and comment on that. I've dealt with the issue of the deserved students. Then I think there's one other question, and can I just say that the successes with your pass rate, etc., I think you are one of the institutions that are really going out of your way, and I think you recommend it. And it's not because we were threatened with some previous and former students here, and alumni sitting in this meeting, but I think we need to acknowledge where you're performing well. Even the research detail increase, I am concerned about the fact that we're not increasing the cost, and therefore we are in fact promoting, it's almost like, what do you call it, blackmail. you must perform, you must get further output from the lecturers, etc. But in the meantime, there's no guarantee there will not be more funding coming your way. In fact, you must share it with more institutions. So I'm very concerned about that, and that needs to be adjusted. Chair, so it was just that comment that I wanted to make.
Thank you very much. Next, I don't remember thanking Kasim for his input. Thank you very much, Kasim, and then thank you, Ms. Killian. Over to you, Mr. Suela.
Thank you, Chairperson. and let me first welcome the presentation. I must say it was a good presentation. And from the book of things, the University of Fort Hare is doing very well with limited resources, and that needs to be applauded. Now, I just want to also indicate that from the presentation, there were issues relating to financial exclusion. I just want to find out that were these financial exclusions a result of poor academic performance, or could it be that the university's fees are so high that the students cannot afford it? And then one of the slides is also indicated that in the initial years, the university funded up to about 85% and 100%, and thereafter full funding. Now, what has happened to the students who were not fully funded in the initial years? Are they part of the historical debt that the SRC is talking about, and what is being done by the university, obviously, to address that? We also need to understand that the department sets targets for enrollment for universities. Now, if the universities admit more than the targets, where do they hope to get more funding for those financially needy students, not NFR students, somebody just there? Where do they hope to get more funding for that? And if they do not get the funding, what happens then? Protest becomes a reality because hopes are being created for these students to say, now I am admitted and I am financially needy, therefore the university must be finished. Only to find that the university do not have funding because it is one of those historically disadvantaged institutions with no reserve. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for your input. Next. Professor Bozuli.
Thanks very much for all your presentations. I'm just not clear how many students there are at Fort Hare and how many pay fees. And do you think we could have the figures of that over the past 5 years, and also the figures of what the fees are? Have they gone up in the way that the English suggests? Second point is that postgraduates are supposed to apply to the National Research Foundation for their funding. There is a split in access to funding. And I'm just, you didn't give us any figures as to how much of this is happening at Fort Hare and whether those unfunded postgrads have funding from the NRS. Talking about the NRS, there's a third point here, which is that the NRS have exactly the same problem with their postgrads. And the president of the NRS, who's just been made the new vice chancellor of UKZN, managed to maneuver a very interesting deal with Treasury, whereby he was allowed to advance money to the university in January for all the expenses of their postgraduate students till March, based on the estimates of the amounts that have been advanced to those universities in previous years. So I would suggest that we look very carefully into how that was arranged and whether or not the same thing could not be done for undergraduates. Can you just explain what is meant by the financial aid students queuing for 4 months? That sounds bizarre and unacceptable, but I'd just like to know maybe that there is a reason for it. And then I've got millions of questions, so let me cut it down. The level of indebtedness of Fort Hare students, do you have any figures on how severely indebted Fort Hare students generally are? Because we know indebtedness in the country as a whole is a problem. You have presumably some figures on that, and I would like to know more about that. Thank you. That will be all for now.
Thank you, Prof. Next.
to Honourable Chairperson. My first question is on the slide, which is on page number 2. Right from 2009, when I'm looking at the figures of the allocation that has been received, they are all going up, and then when we come to 2014, there is a decline, and right from 2013 to 2014, there is a difference of 452,000 somewhere there. I just want to check what is the cost of this. And then another one, on the process of student accommodation at Alice Residence. On the presentation, it was said that a company was appointed in 2011, and I'm sure it's almost 3 years now. I just want to check how far is the project now. The other one, I just want to ask directing on the university, because seemingly it looks like from 2009, every year the students are protesting. As it now is a tradition that every year they must go for a protest. I want to check what are the plans in place for the university to prevent the student protest from occurring, if there is a proper communication between the students and the university when there are some financial constraints.
Thank you, and then next, Madam Kunu, or is it Mr. Bat, as you say? Oh yeah, the last. Okay. No, that's fine. Mr. Kunu, Madam Kunu, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. Some of the questions that I had have been covered, but would like to register with Evans Fund that really the issue of the timing of the allocation of the grant to the schools, to the universities, is in the center of the challenge. I think everything which goes wrong, all the problems are around the issue of funding to the universities. One would plead that if possible, really it needs to be reviewed. My question to the universities is on the PhD graduates. It is a fact that the NDP also emphasizes the increase in the postgraduates, the PhDs and the masters. When I'm looking at the presentation in 2013, there were 31 graduates, but out of this PhD graduates, 74% is scholar grants and the other 26% is local students. So I'm just interested in knowing whether is there a plan, have you taken notice of this as the institution? Do you have a plan to improve in order to ensure that you produce more of our own in terms of the PhD? Thank you.
Okay, and Sabata,
thanks,
Honorable
Chair, and thank you very much to all the stakeholders, the management, the faculty, and the NSFAS. My first question to the management is, what is the total budget annually of the university? And then, second to that is, I do not know how you made it, but it looks like you guys are actually doing well. My interpretation of doing well is, you come from a very difficult process where there was very few amounts of money to inject to project when everybody was getting money left right and center during the merger. You must remember during the merger others were getting money for harmonization, others to physically locate it to a certain size. Others were getting advances because there were historical debts around pension homes. You didn't
get all of it. You came on your own, and you still stand. I think that's one of the things of the church that we must appreciate, because what was supposed to have been the case when the previous minister Kata Asma was not managing UWC and Forte in particular. It was supposed to be an analysis to establish and gradually whether there were other historical costs. For instance, the fact that you were not able to provide extensively certain scientific fields to associate to that location. The fact that you were not able to grow academically to compete the same research allocation that is now termed belonging to the top five universities. It's not by default that Fute could not deliver itself to those five universities that are having a billion and such. It's historic. These things came from and I just amazed when the department chief director recognizes those five universities that it cannot keep for the special fact and say, we had Chancellor, we had UWC, we had Forte. What kind of a fund can we create for these three? And then model these three as a new generation of historically black universities that must be delivered to the same billion. But for me, to keep on locating them on a structured arrangement that also defeats their own exercise when they succeed is something else. And then the students, I think you've got general demand. From the standpoint of where you actually infrastructure in your university is a problem, and also access to finance is a problem. But my worry is that things should not get physical. I think the leadership must learn that. In particular, if you've got management, you can still talk to them. I think let's reduce the level of physicality. Students must understand that that has to be dealt with in a much more better way. I think one demand that I don't see here is Wi-Fi. Why are you not demanding Wi-Fi? Why are you not demanding Wi-Fi? Because when the university advances the project of electronic books, should be accessing those books through your phone. You should be downloading them through your phone. So why are you not demanding Wi-Fi? That's all that, Jen.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Mbata, I'm now moving over to was Mr. Mbata the last person? All right. I also have got just a few questions. Well, my question is on, I think it's based on the 57.90% of the 99% of claims submitted to NSFAS. I just want to know, how are you mitigating the situation, except that NSFAS also must explain why, because we now left with only 3 months. I don't know if I'm repeating a question, but this question asked earlier, I want to know. NSFAS must explain. You see, when you work with Treasury, Treasury will set a Treasury norm. Within a particular period, you must have paid so much. So, of course, this late payment is not assisting. To me, it becomes an aggravator. So we would like NSFAS to also explain this, but also NSFAS must tell us how are they going to improve, because we'd like to see improvement, really. You can't add salt to the wound. Ours is to find solutions and make sure that, you know, there are less disruptions as far as possible in the institutions, so that we can achieve on taking this nation to greater heights. So that will be the question. The other question is, does the university withhold certificates of students who completed their qualifications but still have outstanding debts we've heard about other investors that withhold certificates. So we want to know if this investor is also doing that. And I think the last one would be, well, there were wide media reports on the challenges faced by South African universities in getting funding from Zimbabwean government. Remember, it's the media, né? But ours is to validate that information. For Zimbabwean students in South Africa, was the university affected? If yes, how did it address the challenge? I think that would be all. We will now request the university management to respond to the issues raised, and where maybe there's a question that is overarching. To Nesfas, I'm sure Nesfas would also come in there just to fill in or to top up. Over to you, Prof.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to all the members of the Portfolio Committee for questions and comments that have been made. I will not be the only one this time addressing the questions. I've taken some of them, but my colleagues will also add. Looking at figures and making sure that we can address this. I'll go step by step with the questions that came, and then my colleagues will add. I'll take one. For instance, I'm going to take the Honorable Kasing now as the first person. Then I expect Lywin, my manager of this first meeting, Lywin, to give an indication of some of the figures which I trying to get as I'm talking, but we'll deal with one person at a time and just finish that one and then go to the next one. The first issue that was raised in terms of questions, I will not talk to the comments, but the comments will also be addressed when we talk about the NSFAS and education responsibility. One issue is on the breakdown for the 64,000 rand tuition, rent, allowances. In terms of fees, tuition fees will vary from program to program. So it won't be one fixed figure. For instance, accounting may be more than EA. So we have that variation. But what we do, just as a general picture of allocation, the first thing that we deduct from students, once they've got the figure, 64,000, is tuition. Because we always say that's the first thing that they come to the university for. So we put aside tuition. It will vary between, if I remember well, it's a maximum maybe about 30,000 tuition, but there's a flowing after that. So we take that aside, and then we go to residence. Residence makes 20,000, so 50,000 will be gone. And then of what remains, first port of call, books. So book allowance will go in, and then food allowance. And let me explain the food allowance. The food allowance is because most of our residences are self-catering, and there's just one center where students can go for food at the student center, where they can buy food and get their base from there. But most students cater for themselves, and they are kitchens or kitchenettes with stoves and everything that have been put together for them. So food is the last thing. Book allowances will be there. But for those who will come from Fuza Rushaka for education and for social development, those are specific grants that cover almost everything, including travel allowances, for them to be able to go and do their practicals. So those will also be deducted before any issue related to food is dealt with. So basically that's the broad outline. And then the 2093, I don't think you'll be able, but Mr. Lawi may have that figure. How many are new, how many are continuing of those students that are in the program? So you can just add whatever information or figures that you want to add on Mr. Cassidy's two questions.
In terms of the 2093, majority of them are continuing students. We've got final year students who require funding, the 289 students. Postgraduates, obviously, we've addressed the postgraduate issue. We've got 531 students without funding there. We've got students who fall under the scheduled category, which amounts to 452. Now, majority of the first years will fall under the DE general loan category. We've got 821, but majority of them are first years. I can't give the exact figures. I go back to my sheets, but I don't have the words at the moment. But majority of them are first-year students that are currently in the system. And as the says, the indicator in terms of the 54,000 is correct. We deduct tuition first. Residence tuition averages from 22.5 to about 32.5, depending on the degree that they registered for. In terms of resident fees, there's a variance as well. If London is more expensive than Ellis. Book allowance is a standard figure. We give each student 4,000 rand for books per annum, but that also depends on available and the total calculation within the 64,000 rand bracket. And then the balance of the allocation will be allocated to meals, which is where the students are feeling at the moment, because one student's cost of study might be 59,000, which means only entitled to 5,000 rand for meals for the year, 500 rand a month over 10 months. Some students are sitting on 60, 63. They'll only get 2,000 from this. It becomes a problem for students in general. Where some students will be fortunate where they'll be receiving the full 10,000 and four, but we don't give more than 10,000 and we can't get 10,000 even though the certification is out of, we can allocate up to a maximum of 12,100 rand for the current academic year. We kept it at 10,000 and we basically allocate the funding equally across the board in terms of the formula and the means that is that we use to determine the allocation per student.
Just to also refer to the point that was raised by Mr. Mabizela about tuition and the balancing up of or equalization of tuition fees. It's more tuition fees than residence fees that we were normalizing. Residence fees would be for Alice would be much more cheaper because it is just the old residence. So we're not trying to increase the fees in Alice to match the standard. That would be unfair on the students. It's more on tuition. And simply because the students also have to get the same quality of lecturers and the salaries are the same. So we cannot vary that.
And again, Madam Chair, if we could also add a point there, what did we see at Justice State? There was also reintegration of fees for ALIS, as he indicated that the fees that they charged were low paid, something like 5,000 rand. So with the refurbishment, of course, that was not sustainable, 5,000 rand per year, that was not sustainable. So with the refurbishment, fees were increased to about 15,000 rand or so. Since 2012.
Thank you. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, TVC. Let me then go to the Honourable Mrs. Killian's points. She has raised, firstly, the steep incline or increase in the number of unfunded students in 2014 and some related questions to that, which I will discuss. Yes, indeed. The number of unfunded students this year has increased dramatically from last year because that once-off that Mr. Daka has spoken about came in last year and covered a whole lot of students who would otherwise have been unfunded. So the historic debt cover and all the funds that came that were additional from the National Kids Fund covered lots of our students last year. That's the point I was raising when I say students will then have an expectation that the following year that will still happen. And of course, we are also at fault, and somebody has raised this issue about admitting students not knowing if they will be funded or not. And my team has always argued on the funding that we get, which may be unpredictable. That at times we get funding towards the end of the year. So rather than denying students access, when they actually qualify, we take them, even if at that point there is no funding that is guaranteed, as long as they pay the minimal initial payment that is required at the beginning of the year. And we to say that if your parents can't pay the debt with you, then they apply during the course of the year. Some in previous years used to get this money, and that's the certainty that we would like to bring to the system. If we are very certain at the beginning of the year there's not going to be any additional funding from the National Skills Fund or anybody else, we would know then that we can't take students who are not funded totally. But anyway, you have raised other issues related to what provision do we prepare for if those students end up not being funded. I've talked about the unexpected funding and the uncertainty that is in the system. Some students who do very well from a previous year, who come in the following year, they qualify for NISFAS, they will get that. But some may not get NISFAS because students, being students, they also don't apply on time and time, and they end up not getting the funds. For those who are very high performance, we have a system of fee waiver that we waive the fees for that student and the student continues through the year. And at times, we've got our own bursaries that we get from the private sector, and then we prioritize students like that. Very minimal. Of course, it would not be like the previous year advantage institutions who are so favored, even by the private sector, to get more bursaries. And of course, alumni for those universities, which we cannot grant them. So we've got alumni who are quite rich, who can use the facility. But for us, we rely on that fee waiver that we do, and students can then go through the year. And of course, banking on hope that we may get funding as we continue to engage with government. Yes, Professor Buzori, we do have that culture still needs to be there. The next question was on student protest and the timing thereof. It varies. Last year it was in February, and it was related, the major issue was the sudden increase in residence fees. So that was the major issue. This year it happened later. Happened now in July. And by the way, I must clarify, although the students always say we management divide them, but this is a fact and I don't think they will dispute it. The first protest in Addis this year was not by the SRC. It was not driven by the SRC. It was driven by a team that called themselves the task team. And this team took all the grievances that we have been engaging SRC on and trying to address and took them as their own and mobilized students. So it was a totally separate issue from our engagement with the SRC and the communication and rapport that we established with the SRC. We try our best to engage them. So it was on that score. Last year, as I said, it was February. The previous years, you would find that some of these protests take place just around SRC elections, when those who want to win elections for some reason, South Africans like protests to be associated with leadership. And I'm a good leader if I can fight management. Then so that's the problem that we've had. So during SRC election time, you find some of the issues come up. So there's also the issue of student politics that plays with. So the issue of breakdown in relationship with which is the third point that you raised about student protest in relationship to with other schools, I wouldn't say we've reached that stage of having a breakdown in relationship. For the past 2 years, the SRC has been working very closely with us, raising the issue, of course, in a robust way, as much as they can. We don't stop them from that. All we say to them, there must be no violence. You must raise the issue as robustly and as strongly as you want to raise them. We will help where we can help and address the issues. So communication is there. We've got quarterly meetings with the SRC, management and SRC, and I chair those meetings myself, and we engage on the issue. The national e-library issues is an accepted and welcome suggested, we will definitely work on that. And that links with the Wi-Fi. The Wi-Fi, although the students will answer themselves, it has been part of the grievances for some areas. What we have fought for with our CIO is that there must be access to internet anywhere in the university, and we are reaching that stage. The only challenge that we have, students don't have laptops, so we have been trying to at least assist the final year to get laptops, but technology also has been a challenge, so students did not have good uptake of the 2,000 laptops that we provided. But of course, we want to extend it to all students. They have also been arguing that the book allowances could actually be converted to them obtaining laptops. And I don't want to go to this one on that one. Because they can access books from that tool. And that's a debate that we're still having with this one. And I don't want to bring it to this forum at this stage. Okay, let me hold it there on the issues that were raised by Ms. Killian. Is there any particular addition that you want to give? I think I've covered everything. Okay. Right. Now, I want to go to the Honorable Mr. Siwela. The first issue was on financial exclusion and the relationship between poor academic performance or high fees which students cannot afford. The financial exclusions would be a variety of students. In the main, really due to poverty that students cannot afford and they had not received funding in the previous year. So the debt of the previous year is carried forward to the next year. And as I said earlier on, those who are high performance, we try and assist as much as possible, waive the fees and accept. Others we try to make arrangements with, say, bring a certificate or a letter that indicates how you are going to address this debt. And we accept them, even with the debt, when they've given us a commitment. So we try our best to make sure that the students do get through the system. Those who are poorly performing is a different case. It's an additional issue that they are not going to get NSFAS funding, they are not going to get assistance from the university. So really, those ones, we have serious, serious challenges in taking back. So that's where the major challenge will be. It's not really the case of the high fees. Of course, students will say, if the fees were lower, I would have, my parents would have afforded to take. Therefore, the high fees that we have are also contributing to more debt for the students, which is partially so. The next point was partial funding versus full funding. The question was, were partially funded students part of the historic debt? We had finished with partial funding in 2010. So for the current year, it's not related to that. Let me just explain this as well. Then we're trying to spread the money as much as possible. And I'm sure you've heard from other universities. And I think the Popo still does that to some extent. But we realize that we have created debt for almost all the students.
Yeah.
So rather fund those ones that you can fund fully and free them from debt and see how to deal with the rest of the students. Mm-hmm. So that's what we have now been doing since 2012. In 2011, we give that full funding. So those who don't have anything will be the ones that have the debt for the next year. The next point was on enrollment targets, a very, very interesting question indeed. We have tried our best to stay within the enrollment target that the university has been given by the Department of Higher Education and Training. Of course, we do exceed to some point, and what we see happening is that it's not the new student, the predictable new student, we try as much as possible to stay within. But what we cannot predict are the returning students. We expect them to pass, but some of them come back having paid, and then we have to carry through those particular students. So most of our additional is related to the returning students who have not succeeded. And that's one of the major things. But there is an element of returning students that I would like to bring to the attention of this committee. That element are students who will have dropped out the previous year on economic grounds. They go and work. Then they come back with money and register the following year. We would have expected them not to come back, but they come back. And then they add to the system. You cannot tell those students they have been doing well. It's only that they didn't have money. They went to work and they come back. So there are various categories of students that make this enrollment go beyond. The university, though, has a challenge. In fact, it's also related to this, in carrying some students who should not be in the system, and those are academic exclusion issues. Some faculty are not as strong in picking up students who are going to go beyond the allowed time that they should spend at the university. So they allow those students to come there. And we always remind students every time when we register that your time at the university is N plus 2 at most. After that, give way for those students who are new, who want to join the system. So some faculties fail to attend that. And actually, this also adds to the fee issue that I was talking about. If you have not completed your modules and you are in third year or second year, and you are carrying some modules from first year, your fees are now not going to be the same for a student who has passed all modules and is attending second year for the first time with new modules, only the second year module. So you carry a debt with you because you're going to be charged for that additional module that you have carried from first year. So the fees go up for that particular student on the basis of what they carry as a new, as a old modules. Of course, now Mr. Mabizela, I'm also going to mention the department as a contributor to the enrollment issues. With the demand for access that is taking place in the country, the department will at times insist that admit those students, and the students that come and we enroll them. And then they hope, they say, we will try and find them, admit them. So we edge on our enrollment, also on that basis. Of course, it's not only the department, it's the community. They demand higher education, and they want us to take as many as possible. We try to keep within, and I've given the registrar a target in his performance agreement that the enrollment must be within the targets that were given by the department. So it's one of his performance, key performance areas to ensure that it happens. Any additions, colleagues, on Mr. Swenna's question? Okay. The next one is from the Honorable Professor Mosoli. And some of the questions are needing has to go to computers because they relate to targets and budgets and all that. Current enrollment and how many KVs are you, what's that chart? The current enrollment at the university is 13,000 total, and of those about 21% are postgraduate students. 79% undergraduate. But I just want to give those who are paying fees, especially from being funded, and again, this is not just NISFANS, but NETBANS, BASARI, and all other sources of BASARI. The number of students in 2013, which also addresses the point that was raised earlier about the drop from Mrs. Kenya. 2013, we have a total number of students being 8,977, and this year 6,334. We generally say about 70% of our students are funded by sponsors or donors. They may be from Zimbabwe, they may be from South Africa, they may be from any country, but they are assisted by sponsors. Then the other ones do get their money from their parents. Very few of them. I will calculate the figure around 25 to 30 in number of students. That may also include those who are unfunded, so that 2,000 that is unfunded, for instance, will be taken from that 13,000 that we have. And therefore, that they add to those who are unfunded at all without being having sponsors. So, how many pay fees? Those who are funded definitely will pay their fees. Those who are not funded, we've got, I was looking at it just here, but I remember the figure because we've just been going through our annual financial statement. From 2013, the outstanding debt, not number of students, but debt, was 118 million. And that was partly Zimbabwe as well. And so I can answer the Zimbabwe question that was raised later on. The Zimbabwe government paid for all their students, previous debt and current students. So we have no debt from Zimbabwe. We did suffer like all the other universities, but now we are paid. Because it was accepted anyway that day. We got all our funding. And now my CFO usually says to country, the Zimbabwe government, which was a problem, is paid. Now it's the South African government that owes us. So that's where we are. Yes, the NRF funding we do use for postgraduate students. It comes separately, and we have not included it in our documents for the NRF. You have the figures. Yeah, so we make use of that to the best of our ability. Difficult because the numbers, the times are limited in terms of money that we receive from the NRF. What we have been lucky with was to get a private person who bequeathed the university an amount that I can freely disclose, about 40 million. And said, use this for postgraduate students. So we were amongst some 11 universities in South Africa that benefited from that request. So that money, we are not going to use the capital. We are using the invest to fund the students so that we can sustain it as much as possible for years to come. Yes, that's not sufficient. But our reserves, by the way, whatever the chief may say we have reserves, it's always earmarked funding. That the donor has said, use it for this. So it's not money that is floating around that we can use for other things. And so we make use of the NRF as much as possible, but other sources of funding. I will leave this one to the SRC, the performance issue. Those are some of the administrative issues that I said we are also at fault at times in our administration. All I can say is that our financial aid office still needs to be capacitated. The year that we are taken over by NISCOS, perhaps the year that will be helped to resolve some of the issues, provided they also bring capacity. When they come in, we still have to deal with funding of students outside in this was fund, so we still need that financial aid office. Indebtedness, I think I've related to the 118 million that I've already raised upon. It's a very serious issue. At times we're being paid, but give up and write off the debt for some of the students. Additions, I'm sure Mr. Lightwing will add to the question.
Thanks, Vicky. Madam Chair, in terms of the students that have to queue for 4 months, the students that keep on coming to the office every day to ask, are there any updates in in terms of additional funding being allocated to the university. And unfortunately, we can't turn students away and say, you were here yesterday, and then you get the answer. No, we can't be rude. We have to be professional. We have to address the questions. Even if a student asks me a question, the same question, 10 days in a row, I have to answer the 10 days in a row, unfortunately. But it's come down to that, and you know, I have submitted a request for additional funding to NSFAS. I've also engaged the regional stakeholders such as Intellica to ask them to source additional funding to assist these students. But the reality is that it's difficult to obtain additional funding, especially with all the factors that we face with today in terms of funding nationally. It's not only for the it's a national issue. And you know, as I said before, I'm a national executive member of CAPSA. We deal with these issues on behalf of all the FETs and the universities to try and curb and look for solutions to this. We try and interact with NSFAS as much as possible. But the reality around the students that come there for 4 months is basically because the students are desperate. They need the money. They stress every day, who's going to pay my fees? They don't have the money available to pay for their fees. And from financial point of view, pretend it's an issue for us. We try and look for alternatives every week, day in, day out. Management engages us. We engage with the students. I've got the SLC literally every second day in my office. They also try and assist us. But it's true, there are backlogs in the queues, and we try and deal with them as much as possible. We have got the students now reapplying for funding for next year, but as the visa has indicated, we're already looking at the start in the year off at the bad end if we do not have sufficient funding to assist the students for the current and upcoming academic year. So that's basically the critical issue that we face with in terms of that. And like we said, you know, last year the additional funding came through, and the first from the CETA funding, the historical debt funding was approved late in the year, the postgraduate funding was also approved late in the year. So the actual number that required funding reduced to 573, whereas this year now you're seeing a steep incline from 573 to 293. But if we didn't receive the funding last year, the gap would have been narrow. It would be a narrow gap in terms of the increase in number of unfunded students between 2013 and 2014.
I can see the president wants to top up on the responses. Please come in.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No, Madam Chair, as much as we've highlighted earlier on that, we appreciate the fact that the crisis is at a national level, and we do not exempt our university on administrative issues. Hence, we've got the issue of long queues. The main reason why we have long queues that last for 4 months is precisely because normally we came for students after the registration period, and that is roughly around March. And we would expect students to submit an agreement form to financial aid office. And the reality of the matter is that students were being told over time that there is no money from NSFAS. But obviously, that is the language that we cannot expect students to understand, that there is no money, that the student must literally sit at home and do nothing with the phone. And students kept on going to queue there. But as I've said before, that there are issues where we need to appreciate where issues administrative were able to be solved through a dialogue, and from both sides of the table we did agree that within, despite the fact that this is a national crisis, let us sort out issues which are administrative, issues where we can stakeholders within the institution. I think we have improved on that department. And we have even agreed to a framework to say that when first time those forms are submitted, because there are students who are literally sitting with those agreement forms, they don't know when would they submit those forms, whether the act of 2014 will ever be paid for. That is the crisis we are facing. And we have agreed from both sides of the management that we'll design a framework where those forms will be submitted, whether in a form where we create a space in a hall. All officials in that hall, they will accept forms. Students must do what they need to do and go and attend classes. on the issue of the Wi-Fi for another member, our engagement with the management was that we must rather to instead to save costs from the management on buying laptops for laboratories. We are living in a generation where now technology is user friendly for academic purposes. Laptops are becoming more heavier. You need a lighter item like your iPad and tablet and so forth. It's more advisable that you increase your Wi-Fi access across the campus. And that is currently taking place, which we appreciate, because we ultimately have to appreciate where development has been done. We appreciate that. The reason why we advocating that there must be a access to Wi-Fi in across the campuses for both campuses is that we need students to have tablets and laptops. And we need that approval must be given through confirmation from NSFAS to say the university can